knows absolutely what is about to happen. And he knows that time is short with his disciples. And so he wants to pass on what is important. It's his final chance for him to talk to them about things that really matter. And if Jesus felt that it was important in their last time together that he should talk again and again and again about the Father and the Holy Spirit and the Son and how they love each other, serve each other, work together, well, we need to listen up. Because if it was that important that the disciples should wrestle and think about the idea of the Trinity, well, it's important for us as well. So this morning we're going to look at two things that we can learn about the Trinity from this passage. We're going to learn about an invitation, and then we're going to learn about what does that mean. So two things about the Trinity: an invitation to us, and then what does that mean for us and how we respond. So the first thing that we notice in about the chapter, the Trinity in the passage that Shirley read, is that there is constant movement and interaction. So if we have a look at some of those verses, not only in the passage that Shirley read, but also that whole section that I was talking about. So here's some examples. For instance, John 16:13, Jesus says, "I will go so that the Spirit will come. But when he does come, he won't speak his words, but only what he hears from God." Chapter 14:10 says, Jesus says, "I don't speak my words. The Father lives in me and does his works." Verse 30, "I only do as the Father has commanded." John 15, "I am leaving and going so the Father can send the Spirit to glorify the Son." And so on and so on. I could give many more examples. There's this constant, perfect, coordinated, balanced interaction between the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, always moving. One sends, the other goes, and then steps back so that the third may come. One speaks, but only the words given by the other. One does works, but only that which are given to them by another to do. One goes out, but only to bring glory to those who are left behind. Leading, following, lifting up, stooping down, stepping forward, stepping back. Does that remind you of anything? As a student at York University many years ago, I had the privilege for a year to go to a church and sit under some amazing preaching by the vicar at the time called David White. And he was terribly big and had his big black beard, and he was a very intimidating person, but he was the most amazing preacher. And I will never forget the time he preached on the Trinity. And he talked to us about how the word in Greek for the way that the Trinity interact and work together is perichoresis. I'm not a Greek speaker. Perichoresis. And that is the word from which we get our word choreography. The way that the Trinity interact and work together is like a dance. They are always encircling one another in perfect harmony and balance and symmetry. Unlike me, no one steps on anyone else's toes. No one gets the timing wrong. They are always on time, always orbiting each other. The Trinity God is always on the move. The second thing about the Trinity is sort of linked to the first. This moving, dancing God is characterized by absolute self-giving love. If we think about what is the opposite of dancing and moving, well, it's standing still. It's being static with your arms crossed. Saying things like, it's my turn. I don't want to do this dance. Or, I'm going to star in this dance. You step back and watch me. You would never, ever hear the Trinity speaking like that. Each voluntarily circles the other, pouring love and delight into the others, always deferring, always giving way, always stepping back so that others can be glorified. Hear these kind of verses. Chapter 16, verse 14. I go, but when the Spirit comes, he doesn't glorify himself, he glorifies me. Chapter 17, 1. Jesus prays that the Father would glorify the Son, not so that he might keep the glory, but so that the Son may glorify you. In the dance of the Trinity, no one does anything for themselves. Remember what we said at the end of this passage. Jesus is going to walk out the room, be arrested, be tortured, and die the most unimaginable death, so that his Father may be glorified and bring many, us here today, to glory. The Trinity God always acting, circling, giving way to bring others to glory. The Trinity is absolutely characterized by this amazing self-giving love. So, what does that mean this morning? We could cut the sermon short here. We could say, it's a wonderful thing to reflect on the beauty and the harmony of the perfect Trinity God. Except, I think we all know that just thinking about something is never going to change us. We're never going to be, if we just think about the Trinity, we're never going to become the church that has changed and then goes out to transform the world. And actually, the truth is that the Trinity is not a performance dance. Last night, I went to watch West Side Story, and it was wonderful. I went, lovely time, and then went home. But the dance of the Trinity is not like that. It's not where we just sit and watch and take in. It's actually one where we are invited to take part. The dance of the Trinity God is supposed to get inside us and change us. Let's have a look at some of the verses from the passage. Because this whole section of John is an invitation to us to be part of the dance. So things like John 14, we, that's the three-person God, come to them, that's us, and make our home with them. 15:4, abide, we should abide in him as I abide in you. I give you my glory. I have spoken that my joy may be in you and your joy complete. So we're invited to be part of this amazing three-person God dance. And I think it's important to notice, to mention here that we're not invited to be part of this amazing self-giving dance because God needs us. There is absolute satisfaction and perfection within the Trinity before we were created. Creation didn't happen because God was lonely and needed us. It's not like some couple who wake up one morning and think, we haven't got much to talk about anymore, let's have a child, so we're completely fulfilled. That was never why we were created. There was absolute perfection and harmony within the Trinity. But, and this is one of the important thing to note, is that the self-giving love of the Trinity is always, always, always looking to overflow and invite others in. The story of the Bible, the story of the gospel is an invitation to be part of the moving, self-giving love of the Trinity. So what does this mean? What does this mean for us? How can we make this a bit practical? And so what I want to do is just think about how this moving, self-giving love of the Trinity might affect the way that we relate to God, our up, how might it affect our in, the way that we relate to our families and our church family, and how might it affect the way that we look out. So how does our Trinity God and our relationship with him, how does that affect our up and our out and our in? So first of all, how does understanding the Trinity change that we relate up to God? And the truth is that you can't relate to Jesus on your own terms. If we are to be part of this mutual, self-giving love of the Trinity, we always need to be moving towards God. If we're not, what we're doing is folding our arms and standing still. If we are always moving towards God in self-sacrificial love, we won't be saying or thinking things like, I will only follow you, God, as long as you don't ask me to do this. Or as long as you don't try and change this part of me. Or as long as you don't expect me to forgive so-and-so. Or as long as you don't expect me to worship in a way that with songs that I don't like, or in a worship style that doesn't suit me. Because what we're doing if we say those things or think those things, and sometimes we need to dig pretty hard to see if we are thinking them, because we're pretty good at covering them up. I am anyway. If we are saying or thinking those things, then what we are saying to God is, I'm not going to move. You can move to me. You can circle around me, but I am not going to move towards you. Now, you might be sitting there thinking, well, why not? Why should I give up everything? It's my right. I can enter this dance to the extent that I choose. Sure. But remember who made the first move in this dance. Where would you be? Where would I be if Jesus had set boundaries and said, I'm only going to do things that I want to do. I'm only going to be part of your plan, God, as long as I'm not put out. Where would you be if Jesus had not sat down in the Garden of Gethsemane and through sweat and blood and tears said, not my will, but yours be done? Where would we be if Jesus had not given himself completely on the cross? Yes, if only one person gives themselves in a relationship with love, there can be problems. But when everyone gives to each other in self-giving love, like within the Trinity, we are safe. We can give ourselves to God, to our wonderful Trinity God, with the absolute assurance that he first loved us and that he is constantly encircling us with the self-giving love of the Trinity. He's always coming towards us, even when we reject him. He is always stepping back, bringing glory to us and the rest of the Godhead. And we used to sing a song, I think we still do, his love never fails, never gives up, never runs out on me. And I think to the extent we know the self-giving, encircling, constantly moving love of our three-person God, to that extent we will be able to give ourselves to him with abandonment, without small print, without caveats, without exemption clauses. So the Trinity God changes our up. But it also, the Trinity God changes our in, the way that we relate to our family, the people that we live with, and also our church family. God is in essence relational. And we can't fully know him by ourselves. We need each other to fully know him. Imagine what really knowing the Trinity God and the self-living, constantly moving love of the Trinity God would do to your marriages. If you were both circling round each other, never getting your own way but giving way, never stepping forwards but letting others come forward. What would that do to your flats, to your housemates? How would that transform your family life? Always thinking about how to defer, how to lift others up. What would it do to our church family life if we were always moving towards each other in mutual, self-giving love? There would be no room for criticism. There'd be no room for unforgiveness. There would be no standing still, static, I'm not going to do that because that's not how I like to do things. Just think how much encouraging, how much generosity, how much compassion and mercy there would be if we were always, as a church family, thinking about how to bring glory to others, how to defer, how to lift up, how to step back and ensure that others flourish. Isn't that the kind of marriage you want? Isn't that the kind of family you want? Isn't that the kind of church that you want to be part of and that would attract others to come in? The church is always, we should always be moving to each other in that wonderful mutual self-giving love. And finally, knowing the mutual self-giving love of the Trinity transforms our out. We've already said that God, the Trinity, three-person God, never keeps that love within that sort of the boundaries of the Trinity. It was always looking for ways to overflow, to overspill, to spread out. The Trinitarian God is always wanting to share love, even if it means becoming uncomfortable. It's always overflowing. And so we, a church who knows this three-person God, should always be moving out. Not focus on our satisfaction or our comfort, but looking for others. How can we pass on the love of God, even if that means getting uncomfortable? One more thing before I land. I just want to remind us again, I know I've said it a couple of times, that this is the last thing Jesus says before he goes out and is crucified. He knew when he left that room that everything was going to change. He knew that he was going to be arrested. He knew that he was going to be killed. But he also knew that it wasn't just him who was going to suffer, but the disciples too would suffer. Chapter 14, verse 15, he says, "The world will hate you and persecute you." Chapter 16, 2, you will be scattered. No longer this nice, cozy little tribe we've known for the last 3 years. You will be scattered and alone and persecuted. Chapter 16, verse 33, one of the most sort of heaviest promises that Jesus makes. He says, in this world, this is a promise, you will have trouble. Things were going to get really tough for the disciples, tougher than they could ever imagined in that upper room. And What's more, we're going to have to go through those things without the physical presence of Jesus by their side. And so what Jesus says in the upper room must be to help them get through what was to come. They're words of comfort and hope and strength to help them face what was to come. And I think it's really important to remember about the Trinity that Jesus doesn't say to them, in this world you will have trouble, so therefore it's very important that you get your head around a complex theological tenet. Rather, there is actually something about knowing and being part of the love of the Trinity that will help them face the world, that help them face what was ahead. It wasn't just a knowing something theological, it was being part of Jesus and the Father and the Holy Spirit dwelling in us and us in them. That was what was going to help them face what was ahead. And if it's true for them, it's true for us. In this world, there will be trouble. But if we accept his invitation to be part of the dynamic, self-giving love of the Trinity God, we will be able to face whatever happens with hope and joy.